Clayton Eshelman is an Indiana-born poet who traveled the world but ended up not too far from home as a professor at Eastern Michigan University in Ypsilanti. For about 20 years, Eshelman published a magazine about poetry in its many facets, which has been compiled into a just-published anthology. He recently spoke with Current State's Jamie Paisley about this very interesting project.
Sulphur is a very unusual poetry magazine. Most poetry magazines are either all poetry or poetry and short stories with maybe a handful of reviews at the end. And Sulphur was an attempt to make use of a lot of scholarship, and so I was printing people like N.O. Brown and James Hillman, archetypal psychology, you know, and philosophy. And I see this as part of the matrix or the thinking that is akin to poetry and often overlaps with poetry. James Hillman was a big poetry reader as well as a archetypal psychologist. So the magazine was unusual in that sense, that, and also the fact that it published a lot of art and art commentary. So we did a number of things that most poetry magazines don't do.
Well, I know that in total there was about 11,000 pages. So could you talk about the process of kind of culling the best material for this anthology that's coming out right around now?
That was a terrible job. Just terrible. Because I probably could have put together a half a dozen anthologies of 700 pages that would have been almost of equal value and accuracy in terms of the magazine. But I knew that no publisher was going to do anything larger than 700 pages. In fact, Susanna Tamminen at Wesleyan felt she was being extremely generous by doing a 700-page anthology. So I had to eliminate almost all of the book reviews, which was terrible to do because we had a 50-page commentary section average of each issue. So virtually all of the book reviews got cut. I kept a few in just to, because they were very special and because of I wanted some sense of book reviews as part of the magazine in the anthology. And all of the artwork was eliminated. And that was easier to do because we published most of the artwork in black and white, so we lost color. And the idea of reproducing artwork in black and white in the anthology didn't seem to me to be essential. So those were two cuts that sort of took care of themselves. What was very difficult to do was to eliminate so much of the poetry and so much of the commentary in terms of essays and long articles. And I kept about a half a dozen pieces that run between 20 and 25 pages each. To show them as part of the fabric of the magazine.
For what is in the anthology, how much would you say is of your own devising?
Of my own devising?
Your own works, your own poetry.
Of my own work. Well, there's only one poem.
In the entire anthology?
Yeah. But there's a longer piece on Upper Paleolithic cave art, and there's a long conversation with James Hillman on poetry. So I think all in all, I have 8 or 9 contributions to the anthology. Yeah. But, I mean, in terms of the amount of my material that was cut out, why there's just a drop of Eshelman in the anthology relative to, because I contributed to every issue. I had book reviews, commentary, translations, a lot of translations. Yeah.
Now, is that because of humility? Is this that you only have one in there?
No, I just felt that there's only one poem by Charles Olson and one poem by Robert Duncan and one poem by Robert Kelly, etc. So, no, I felt that given the situation of having only 700 pages to work with, that it would have been greedy on my part to put more poems in of my own.
We're speaking with Eastern Michigan University Professor Emeritus Clayton Eshelman, poet and translator, about his newly published Sulphur Anthology, with highlights from that publication released from 1981 to 2000, as well as his own distilled collection of poems over the past 65 years, which he'll be discussing tonight at the Ann Arbor District Library at 7 p.m. Clayton Eshelman has devoted much of his career to the process of translating poetry, and perhaps the single person with whom Eshelman is most associated with is Peruvian poet Cesar Vallejo, his co-translation of which won the National Book Award in 1979, but as to whether of any of those Vallejo translations made it into Sulphur Anthology?
No, there's no Vallejo.
None.
No, because the Vallejo that I published in the magazine were drafts and were not final versions. So I didn't want to put any of those into the anthology. There's some Aimé Césaire. I'm still translating Aimé Césaire. I've been working on Césaire since the mid-60s.
Could you talk about the process of co-translating?
In terms of a co-translator, I worked a lot with a woman named Annette Smith on Aimé Césaire. But she and I were both at Caltech, and she helped me become the poet in residence at Caltech in the humanities division there for several years. And she would do a first draft, and I would sit down and quiz her about the first draft. And then I would take her draft home with me and check everything word by word in the dictionary. And also, I probably spent more time with my English dictionary, my international Webster's, than I did with the French English dictionaries. And then I would get together with her again, and we would do a second draft together. And then I would take the second draft home, and I would go over it again. And generally, by the third or the fourth draft, we would have something that we could both agree on. On one level, it's scholarly activity. You have to do your homework when you're translating. You can't guess at things. And most of the bad translations are done by poets who are not completely bilingual and are simply guessing at things. And when they don't understand something, they guess and they just put it in. I mean, there are translations by people like Robert Lowell and Robert Bly that are just, you know, errors in every line, which I consider to be careless work.
Interjecting of the South.
Yeah.
Well, considering you only have a small amount of your own work in the Sulfur Anthology, Professor Eshelman, would you mind reading a bit from the introduction which you have added to this new publication?
I'm reading from near the end of the introduction, and I write, "What was true for Whitman, shunned by most of the men of letters of his time, is still true for poets as different as Robert Kelly and Ron Silliman, whose work is much more complex than that of, say, Billy Collins and Rita Dove, whose writings are heralded by the practitioners of today's official verse culture. Students buy text anthologies and read poetry because it is part of the curriculum. Doctors and lawyers do not in any noticeable sense, but many in a very noticeable way collect paintings, and not merely because wealth is involved, but because paintings and many novels, plays, and films offer more surface than poetry. They demand a less active response. One has to work hard to assimilate material out of the cantos, the wasteland, or the Maximus poems. In such works, there is no plot or color field to provide an entrance level that can be bypassed by the ideal observer or just relaxed into. In both Caterpillar, my first magazine, and especially in Sulfur, I've tried to address the range of my interests in art and literature. One of the main visions of both of my journals was to discard the traditional image of the poetry magazine that prints only poetry, or poetry and short stories, and to contextualize poetry, in Robert Kelly's words, as, quote, a science of the whole, unquote, which is fed by and feeds into archetypal psychology, archaeology, and anthropology, and which participates with the visual arts in soul-making and a linking of corporeal and spirit worlds.
There is another interest of yours, which is more cave-dwelling.
From 1974 to 1999, 25 years, I was involved in a part to full-time research job on what I ended up calling Upper Paleolithic Imagination and the Construction of the Underworld. And what it involved was spending a lot of time in the French Dordogne and Ariège regions and visiting some 100, roughly, of the 300 caves there that have Ice Age imagery, paintings that were done as early as we now know, 32,000 to roughly 9,000 years ago. And this is a project that had never been taken on by a poet before. And until I got involved, well, it was the domain of a fairly conservative academic archaeology. And so I visited the caves and spent a lot of time thinking about them, read everything I could find on it, And I wrote a book called Juniper Fuse, which was published by Wesleyan in 2003.
Construction of the underworld. Do you mean like pre-religion establishment
of... The underworld is in the caves. This is the underworld, right? It's on two levels, it's an underworld. It's a literal underworld, and it's a symbolic underworld in the sense that the images are, for the most part, of animals, and many are extremely realistically depicted, but they're not there because they want to hunt and kill the animals. They're there because the Cro-Magnon people, who look just like you and me, were working something out, and I'll have to ask the reader to read my introduction to the book if they want to think, want to find out what I thought they were working out.
Professor Clayton Eshelman, Eastern Michigan University Professor Emeritus, who'll be speaking tonight at the Ann Arbor District Library about a sulfur anthology and his own collection of poems stretching over 65 years. More information about tonight's event at aadl.org. Professor Clayton Eshelman, it's been a pleasure. Thank you.
You're welcome.
For Current State, I'm Jamie Paisley.